Oh, and I wanted to mention, it's interesting, because I also listen to the Russian media now, because I'm trying to finish off my Russian, but I can't let go, right? And, of course, Václav Havel is not appreciated.
Oh, really?
By the Russian government. Mm-hmm. And I would say by public opinion, because public opinion in Russia largely supports the government.
Mm.
He is appreciated by people in the human rights movement, the Helsinki, you know, group or whatever, and I heard some of them interviewed on my Czech radio, and even on Echo Moskvy, there were people who had positives. In fact, one guy very sarcastically commented on the fact that Russia sent their condolences to North Korea over the death of Kim Jong-il, and they did not send condolences to the Czech Republic. Now, you can argue that Václav Havel is not a ruling head of state or government official. He's not in office. Mm. So therefore, according to protocol, they're not obliged to do anything. Whereas Kim Jong-il was the, you know, de facto, whatever he was, president, glorious leader. But beneath that, of course, is the real reason. And the real reason is several. Havel, of course, opposed the communists. He opposed the influence of Russia, because the Comintern and communist sort of hold on Eastern Europe was an extension of the power of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Call it Soviet Union, call it World Communist Movement, call it what you want. It was Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So he has always opposed that. And I think Havel was hoping that Russia would have would evolve in the same way that, say, Czech Republic has evolved into more of a liberal, democratic state, which it hasn't under Mr. Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And in Germany, and Havel in 2003 won an award. I can't remember the name of the award, as being a role model for someone who fights for human rights and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a German award that was established after the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Oh, interesting.
So it's like a Nobel Prize, if you want, but for that specific, you know, people who defend human rights.
Mm-hmm.
And that German committee decided to give the award in 2005, 2 years after Havel got his, jointly to Angela Merkel and Vladimir Putin.
Mm.
And of course they do it for purely cynical geopolitical reasons, because they're dependent on Russian oil and natural gas, and they hope that if they're nice to Putin, he'll be nice back at them, basically. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he has nothing to do with protecting freedoms, freedom of speech, and all the rest of it, is kind of wiped off the slate. Havel said, if you give Putin the award, I'm giving mine back.
Mm.
So obviously, Vladimir Putin didn't like that gesture on the part of Havel. Not to mention the fact that Havel took the side of Georgia in the war between Russia and Georgia. Mm-hmm. So, but at any rate, the commentator in Echo Moskvy was quite cynical in saying that it says something about the values of our government when they, I can't remember what, you know, Kim Jong-il is a good guy and Havel is a bad guy to our government.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at least refreshing to hear that there are some voices in Russia that are, not afraid to express their own views, which, so we should never confuse Russia with even China when it comes to freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these views are not popular in Russia, but you are allowed to say them.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're seeing, you know, more sort of demonstrations of some dissatisfaction with Putin's rule. So it's not at all like China. In China, it's more like it was in the old days insofar as criticizing the government. You can say many things privately, but publicly you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway. So yeah, this is, it's interesting. I mean, Havel was 75.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Kim Jong-il was, I believe, 70 or 71.
Yeah, 68 to 70. And there are people, there are all kinds of conspiracy theories.
There will continue to be.
Well, exactly. There's one guy in Japan who wrote a book saying that Kim Jong-il was actually assassinated some years ago. And that this is a dummy. Okay, that's one. There is the feeling that that there is dissension within the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
That because Kim Jong-il was made, you know, whatever, a marshal in the army without ever having served in the army, that annoyed some members of the army. The fact that Kim Jong-il was prepared to do a deal with the States in order to receive shipments of grain in exchange for stopping their nuclear program, that annoyed some other section of the army, and that there are dissensions. And Of course, there are always factions.
Yeah.
Always. So who knows what's going to happen? You're more familiar with the whole Korean scene than I am.
Yeah. Well, even then, I mean, even to people who know a lot about it, North Korea is so elusive.
Mm-hmm.
It's so difficult to find any substantive information to really learn more about it. And I've, you know, had the privilege of talking to a lot of professors who, you know, study Korean history and Korean politics and have spent a good portion of their life on this, and even to them there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to really having insight into North Korea.
Well, you know, it's interesting, I read in the paper that the children are taken from their parents and brainwashed from the age of like 2. I mean, that is tremendously powerful. And so they probably did think that Kim Jong-il was like their father. They're told that all the time. And I know from listening to Echo Moskvy that when Stalin died, despite, you know, perhaps 1 in 10 Russians were either killed or imprisoned by him, you know, and I mean, massive famine and farming areas all caused by this man. And plus, out and out, just eliminating people, like shooting them, you know, having them shot. And yet, when he died, everyone thought they'd lost, like, their, you know, a family member. Because the power of indoctrination is so great. So maybe those people sincerely feel they lost, like, in a sense, somebody more important than their father.
Right, exactly.
I don't know.
I mean, it's interesting. And I think one thing that, in a way, sets it apart, too, is that in the time of Stalin, something like the internet was not even conceived, barely.
So to compare long it, before the internet.
And so looking at it from that perspective, it's so interesting to see that some 70 years later, that in a world where now we're so connected with each other that, you know, we're talking here and people are listening to us in countries all over the world, that North Koreans can basically have no, they're not allowed to have access to anything outside. Everything is totally restricted. And if they're lucky, then they get smuggled radios so that they can hear South Korean radio stations.
But,
and that's it.
Well, yeah. And so, I mean, you can't blame individual Koreans who are conditioned by this regime. And perhaps many of them sincerely, I have no idea of the mentality, you know, sincerely are grieving. Probably some are not. We don't know. But to create a regime like that, where a small group of people so thoroughly control the lives, the calorific intake, the thought processes, everything of other people. What right? You know, to me, whatever else you say about democracy, it's corrupt, it's, you know, people, you know, money talks, and all the politicians are the same, and they're all, you know, self-seeking, you know, people who never fulfill their promise. You can say all of these things, but at least you have the means to change it if you want. You can go run yourself. You know, it's as Churchill once said, it's a terrible system, but it's the best system we got. It's a terrible system. Because if you have a system where a small group of people, and the temptation is always there, well, you know, democracy is so wasteful. What we need is a, you know, a really good dictator, you know, someone who's who will always do the right thing, and that'll just be so much more efficient, and you know, and Hitler got everybody working again. Yeah, maybe. There is a X percent chance that the dictator will be a genius, a fair, always make the right decision, and everybody will live happily ever after. But the chances are very low. It's far more likely that we'll end up with variations of Hitler, Stalin, Kim Jong-il, and you name it. And so anytime you allow a small group of people to basically control the fate of so many people, it's evil. And unfortunately, they have the... they have nuclear weapons. But,
And I mean, that, you know, in closing, that's what's interesting too, is a guy like Kim Jong-il, basically, him and his, you know, little crew, they they took control. They made the decision that they wanted control of this. And they, whatever means it cost, they did it. But at the same time, a guy like Havel is the opposite, where he, in fact, attracts the respect of people. He earns that respect. He allows people the decision to say, I like you, I dislike you. But in doing that, and in being just and in being fair, from a completely different ideology, he has excelled so much further.
Well, he has more. He's more certainly gained much more respect. By the way, I understand that Kim, what's the first guy's name? Kim
Kim Il-sung?
Kim Il-sung is still the leader. They like it's like it's not like it's not it's beyond a kingdom there.
Yeah.
It's like a new theology.
Mm-hmm.
Like he still rules from mm-hmm. the grave.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just absolutely extraordinary. Not only is it a family monopoly,
yeah.
but the old man is still ruling from the grave. That's mm-hmm. the kind of system they got there. Anyway.
Yeah.
One day.
So I guess we'll...
we won't be visiting there soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.